Hello and welcome to another episode of A Positive Podcast. A Positive Podcast is powered by OK Clarity. More about them later in the show. If you would like to sponsor an episode in honor of a loved one, or just because you appreciate this podcast, please reach out through my website, apositivecoach.com. If you're curious to hear more information about positive coaching and to see if it's a fit for you, please reach out through my website, apositivecoach.com. Today's episode is a really special one because today is a special day. It's Yud Tes Kislev, the 19th day of Kislev, the month of Kislev, which is the Rosh Hashanah for Chassidus. And we wish each other, as per the Yaim Yaim, L'shana Taiva, B'limud HaChassidus, U'B'darkei Chassidus, Tegaseivu V'sichaseimu. Wishing you all a good year in the teachings of Chassidus and the living in the ways of Chassidus. May you all be inscribed and sealed for a great year. So consider this my bracha to each and every one of you. As I was trying to come up with a special episode in honor of this very special day, I was considering many different ideas. And one of my incredible sister-in-laws, and I have quite a few, so shout out to all of my sister-in-laws, love you guys. One of them, Fredel Schusterman, who's a shlucha in Indianapolis, she shared with me an interesting tidbit. And she said that in the early days of the Alter Rebbe, the first Chabad Rebbe, no one was born a Chabadnik or a Lubavitcher. There were some who were students of the Maggid and the Baal Shem Tov, but by and large, they came to Lubavitch on their own. So every year on Yud Tes Kislev, besides for reading the, quote, Megillah, so to speak, of the story of the liberation of the Alter Rebbe, when he was released from prison, they would have a chassid or two share their personal story of how they came to Lubavitch, how they came to be a chassid of the Rebbe. And most of them had incredible Mesiras Nefesh, self-sacrifice. And these were incredible stories that were inspiring and uplifting. And many of these stories we know from stories that we've heard. So when my sister-in-law shared this tidbit with me, I was inspired to continue this custom and celebrate this special day with all of you by bringing on someone who chose Chassidus and brought it into their life. So another sister-in-law of mine, Dina, suggested that I ask Zaya from Zaya Comedy to share her story of becoming a religious Jew and how she became to be a Chabad Chassid, and I thought that was a great idea. So I was really happy when Zaya agreed to be a guest on my podcast. Now, Zaya is a comedian. She's a wife. She's a mom with so many other things as well, and she shares the funniest content on Instagram. She has close to 50,000 followers, and she's an deep, insightful person. She's funny, and I thought it was an incredible conversation. It was like our very own little Farbringen that we had, and I think you will find it inspiring, entertaining, and meaningful. So sit back, relax, and be ready to grow. The Positive Podcast is brought to you by OKClarity.com. OKClarity is the place for any Jew, no matter how religious you are, to find an excellent therapist, psychiatrist, coach, or nutritionist, and it's completely free for you to use. OKClarity.com's professionals are vetted, and they have extensive experience working with the Jewish community. Yes, you can even find me there, because I'm listed as a coach. If you're in the market for a therapist, a coach, a nutritionist, a psychiatrist, or the like, you want to check them out. If you don't find what you're looking for, they have a concierge service where you complete a short form, and they will personally match you with someone. Just an important side note, if you are a wellness professional, I highly recommend joining their directory. Their team is amazing, and I've received referrals from their platform. And OK Clarity has an amazing WhatsApp status with over 8,000 obsessed followers. And yes, I am one of them. Their WhatsApp is a free way to improve your mental health, and they post great humor, so you'll laugh too. If you have WhatsApp, shoot them a message at 917-426-1495. Again, that's 917-426-1495. We'll put the links to their website and their WhatsApp in the show notes, so you can find those links and go ahead, smash those links. You will not regret it. And now, back to our show. So welcome, Zaya, to A Positive Podcast. I am so excited to be sitting across from you on the computer screen and talking to you. Thank you for being here. Really, really.
Thank you for having me. I'm so honored to be here.
And I just have to say, I'm a big fan. And not only me, but my husband and my children get to see some of your clips and they crack up and we love it and we share that with the family. And especially
the Israeli stuff because my mom's Israeli. So a lot of it is very, you know, very spot on. You're just really good at it. So, okay.
Thank you. Thank you.
So my first question is Zeya, could you walk us through your journey into becoming a Chabad Chassid and including, please include your return to Yiddishkeit and Chassidus so we can kind of get a sense of what that looked like.
Yeah, of course. When I was a teenager, that was really when everything started. I grew up in Canada, but I was born in Israel, and we did not have any type of religious, background. We went shopping on Shabbos, and we didn't keep anything, and we had a Chabad house nearby, and they would, knock on our door to come for, come to synagogue and things like that. But that was it. I went to public schools. We spoke Hebrew at home, and that was pretty much, whatever I knew from, like, being Jewish, right?
Right.
So my oldest brother was the one that really, like, started to become interested in some things. He started learning with the rabbi here and there, and then he went to the Israeli army, and he was like, in the beginning of his journey, when like he would even send us picture. I remember he sent us a picture of him putting tefillin when he was in the army. And I was living my regular life. I went to high school. I was in high school, and then on towards the end of my high school year, like the last year, there was a rabbi that would come every Wednesday and bring pizza. He was really cool, and like he was just like had all these like amazing fun things, really have like really cool stories to tell us and share with us. And so I had a friend of mine that was also Jewish, and I was like, you want to go? I don't know. Like, it was kind of awkward in the beginning, and then we just decided to go once in a while because he brought pizza, and we're like, all right, look, there's free pizza. And then we went every Wednesday, and then he told us about this NCSY Shabbaton. And he's like, come, it's in Toronto. You'll see what it feels like to keep Shabbat, And I was like, oh my gosh, like a whole Shabbat, I didn't really know if that's something that I wanted to do. And I told my best friend about it, and he really like got us hyped up. He was like, oh my God, you're gonna have such a good time, thank God for people like
Yeah, those NCSY rabbis, they're really incredible. They do incredible work and they do this
Yeah.
schools all over. Like
Yeah.
it's really powerful thing that they're doing. Yeah.
Yeah, it was just so like almost you can't say no,
Right.
So I went to that, and then that was something that was just incredible to be with a bunch of Jewish people from all over the world singing songs that I didn't know, but like some of them were Hebrew songs, and it's just everybody all together, and we're like holding, like hugging each other, and like a Shabbat meal. It was just so like something that I didn't feel before, like this connection to other Jews. And I just remember being very, very amazed by it. And my friend and I, we were like, oh my gosh, like, is this what we want to do? Like we want to kind of go through this. Like, we want to keep Shabbat, but we don't really want to be so religious because that's too much, So like, where's the, like, we're trying to figure it out. We're teenagers, right? So we're trying to like, where do we go from here? Like, this is really amazing. We got a little taste of it, and so where do we go from here? Because we don't like going back to school, and it was just like, oh, there's much more to this. Like, there's much more to life. It was a little eye-opening experience that was like there's a whole other world out there that we have no idea about, so that Shabbaton was really a very big part of it. And then my brother was he came back from the army, and he decided that at one point he wanted to go to yeshiva, and he went to Hadar Torah in Crown Heights, and he used to call us. And he used to like tell us stories, and he was just on high, and we were like, okay, whatever, but none of us were religious in the house. Like, we all kind of knew that like the older brother went to yeshiva, and whenever he called, it was like a fun time that we got to see what he's learning. And he was telling me about, he actually brought a bunch of Bacharim at one time to our house. And one of them was Matisyahu. He was in yeshiva with Matisyahu.
Cool.
And he came and he started doing his beatboxing. He was like, you know, and I remember being like, oh my gosh, religious people, like, this is crazy. Like, they're so cool, you know, like that. Just like little exposures. Really, my journey is not one moment that happened that, like, you know, it was little things, like, you know, my brother telling me at one point telling me about a woman yeshiva. He's like, you know, there's a woman one, like, you could come here to Crown Heights and learn. And I was like, you know, I don't know, I wasn't sure. I was like, you know, about to finish high school, and I was still kind of like trying to wear a skirt here and there. Like, I was, you know, you don't really know what you're doing with when you don't have like a proper guidance, you know. And I knew that, like, I wanted to learn more. And so I was like, okay, I'll try out the summer program of Machon Chana. That summer I went there, and ever since, like, that's it. That was, I loved it. I loved it right away. Amazing teachers. And it was in the Catskills. And I remember just calling home and saying, like, you know, my parents are like, you know, what's going on? Are you okay? You know? And I'm like, I love it. Like, it was just something that I knew that I belonged to, without someone telling me, this is what you should be doing, you know? And
which,
it was
which
just
part, which part do you think was the part that you most connected to? Was it the camaraderie and the connection, or was it the spirituality? Was it a combination? I'm just curious.
Yeah. So it's interesting because, it's both, you know, feeling like, obviously if I was alone doing this, it wouldn't be the same. It was me going with my best friend. We went together, and experiencing it together and sort of deciding, okay, no, this I don't really like so much, but this is really cool. And this is like, you know, kind of figuring that out, but knowing that there's a bunch of other women from all over the world that also are on the same path as me. And we're all sort of sharing, you know, our lives together. And that was a very big part of it. Like, other women, together, experiencing it together, figuring it out together. And the truth is, like, when, you know, you ask me if it's like learning, the learning was really like deep right away. Right away, we learned deep concepts like Tanya. You would think like someone would tell you, you know, you first coming into your exposure to Judaism and Torah is like, okay, you learn the basics, what it means to be a Jew. It was right away, Tanya, like, you know, what it means to be a Beinoni and what it, like, all these deep, deep mystical teachings. And I was loving that. And it's so crazy to me when I think back, like, how did I didn't even know the Parsha. I didn't even know who Moshe Rabbeinu was, you know, like, I didn't know anything. But this, I loved, like, instantly, because I was like, it really spoke to me.
I think that's the beauty of it, is that that's the reason why they do that, because when you go deep and you get the ideas that speak to your soul, then you can go and do the simple stuff. Oh, hey, I say Moda Ani in the morning, I wash my hands. Okay, those are things I could figure out, but I got to know why. Like, why am I doing all this? Like, what's the thought behind it? What do you mean I have a soul? What do you mean I have two parts to my soul, the two souls that are dueling each other? What does that mean to my life? And and the other stuff you get to later, but that's incredible. So that's the part that really spoke to you, the deeper, the teachings and all of that.
Yeah. Knowing that, learning about what that higher power is, what is Hashem? Why do I feel this connection to something that I never even knew, you know, existed? And just learning more about, like, God, like, that there is a God, and that not everything is up to, like, me, and that there's, like, this much bigger thing that, like,
that's powerful. Okay, so from Machon Chana that summer, what was next? How old were you at this point?
So I was, I believe, We finished high school, grade 11.
Right.
So in Montreal, but, how old was I? I think I was around 17 or 17. I was one of the youngest girls there. And then after that summer program, my friend and I, we were like, okay, you know, like they told us about the year program over there. My friend, she wanted to come, but her mom was like, you know, you need to finish college. You need to go to college. And so we separated at that point, which was very hard for me because it was like, you know, you're always doing, it was like my best friend was with me all along. And then, yeah, decided to go to the year program. I made other friends in the summer program that also decided to go to the year program. One of my friends, Eliza, she's actually a shlucha. And so we knew we would meet each other there, and we went to the year program in Crown Heights. And that was really it. And my brother would visit me. He was so like proud and excited, and he would come and bring me a chitas. And, you know, there, like Crown Heights was really the beginning of me really learning about the Rebbe, you know, because it's such a big thing in Crown Heights. In the summer program, we didn't really learn so much about like the Rebbe and Hasidim. You know, over there was more this like, it's a movement, it's a thing. It's like, you know, everybody like seeing 770, seeing, you know, videos that Crown Heights Machon Chana experience was really the beginning of that too. You know, yeah. I didn't know any of that.
Right. And so how did that feel? Did you connect to that? Did it feel strange to you? Did it speak to you?
So it's interesting because I think that, you know, everybody learns differently, and there were girls there that questioned things a lot, you know, like, and it's normal.
Right.
And they're like, ah, what is this? Like, why are they praising this person? Like, you know, and there was some question, but I think that I learned in a way that I was more mikabel. I was more like open. I didn't ask too many questions because I knew it to be true, even though I didn't even know what it is. It's like a weird thing when I think about it. Like, it was like almost that I knew that I belonged here. And they say that, you know, the Rebbe handpicks the girls that come to Machon Chana.
Right.
And so I knew that it was like almost like I'm your long lost daughter, and like, I'm finally here. So I'm just going to learn what your teachings are, because like, you know, I finally made it here, and you know, this is where I'm meant to be. So it wasn't like, I wasn't a questioning type of learner. It was more like, this is what I'm meant to do. And so I was a learner. I was a good, you know, like.
You had Kabbalah Soul, as we call it. There was a lot of Kabbalah Soul for you.
Yes. Yes. I was that type of student. I knew, like, I didn't question it. Like, let's say like afterwards, okay, I didn't do things without thinking.
Right.
But, you know, if something made me like uncomfortable, I didn't like, you know, I didn't just do it without thinking, but I knew that like, I didn't question the teachings. Like, I was very open.
Very much like it was something that you knew to be true. And you're like, well, I'll get to that when I need to get to understanding it completely. But right now I just gotta get it all in. I gotta soak it up and see what I can take from here, because I know this is all true. Whereas some other people may be like, can you prove to me that it's true? Like, how do we know this?
Yeah.
Can you show me that, like, that this Torah is true? Like, why do you think this is true? And, you know, so many other religions believe that their religion is true. Like, how do we know that this one is? Or,
yeah,
like, I know this in my bones.
Exactly. It wasn't foreign. It wasn't foreign to me. I never knew of anything, but it wasn't foreign to me.
I wonder if it has to do also with, and I'm just wondering out loud here, like being a Sephardi, coming from that kind of background, there's a lot, you could see that as somebody, they're so heartsick. Their heart is so first. When you see them daven, when you see them at the Kever of a Tzaddik, there's so much emuna and there's so much faith there. I wonder if, because even though your parents were not religious, but there was a lot of that in your childhood and your upbringing that may have impacted that as well.
Yeah, I didn't think of that before. And I think that you're right. You know, we had a group of Israeli girls, Sephardi girls, and we were like on fire, you know, like we were on fire. We didn't really, yeah, like we, it's sort of like this emuna, simple emuna that we had. Yeah, like I think that you're right. And also the fact that I knew that I wasn't going against my parents. A lot of the girls there felt that they had to kind of prove to their family that this is okay, because they weren't accepted. Some of them, their parents, you know, didn't come to their weddings or whatever it is. Like, you know, we were like very supportive of each other and everything. But when you don't have the backup of your parents, it's sort of like you need to prove to yourself so that you could go and prove to them. You know,
very good point.
I knew that my parents like were very proud of me. Like they were like, wow, okay, you know, my mom would be like, "Can I yeladim sheli datiim?" You know, like to her family in Israel. You know, like
I love it.
So very, yeah. So
she was very proud of you, and that makes a big difference. That's a huge thing. Okay, so you were there for a year. You soaked it all up. You learned. What was next?
Then, my best friend joined a year after me, it was interesting because we kind of clashed when she came, because she was like, "Oh, you know, hold on a second, like let me, you know," she's just like, you know, fresh out of whatever, and she still had her like Sephardic sitter that she was, you know, like whatever, and I didn't really ever have any type of traditions at home or what sitter to use, so I right away went into the Tehillat Hashem, and so I was like, oh, you know, you should use this, and you know, like a bel teshuva, you're excited, but you don't really think like so much before someone else is like not on that level yet. Like, you know, you there's no kind of barriers. You're just like, no, but you should do this. This is the right thing to do. And so like, I understood later, like, okay, hold on. Like she wasn't here for a year. Like she was in college. Like everyone, like I kind of wanted her to be with me in the same like level. But then we understood how to reconnect. We had to reconnect. Yeah,
you were ahead of her, basically. You were like a year ahead, and she needed to catch up.
Yeah, and I wanted, you know, and then it was beautiful how till today, like where we live near each other, we're connected, and she's really like a very big like we support each other very, very much. I'm very grateful to have that in my life. But that was a year there. Oh, no, sorry, maybe 2 years. I was like a really, you know, I had Mrs. Gonsberg. She was the dorm mother, and Mrs. Pape. Like it was just like very Rabbi Majeski. A lot of people that were very, very big parts of our life. It was a second home. It was really like they were like our parents. So I became just very close to everyone, and it became like my family. And then I knew that that's what I wanted to do, and I knew that like I wanted to have a family. I wanted to have a family of my own, and this is how I wanted to raise my children. Eventually, yeah, like it happened in an interesting way. Someone suggested my husband, and yeah, eventually got married, and wow. Yeah.
And now you're living a full-fledged life of a Chabad Jewish mom. And you intersperse your life with some comedy. So we'll get to the other things that you do besides the mom and the comedian. But before we go into other parts, can you think about a Hasidic thought or a teaching that you learned through this process of learning that truly inspired you and helped you, like something that spoke to you deeply?
Yeah. So when you're surrounded by Lubavitchers and, you know, Shluchim and people that are just constantly doing, learning about the concept of Hamaseh Huayikar, like, and really that was how I led my Baal Teshuva journey, just doing, like, this is what I meant to do. You know, like, sort of like Nasiv and Nishma, like, I'll understand it later. But that was really what made me kind of strong in that. Like when I learned about that, I was like, yeah, exactly. You just have to do, you just have to like do. And then, you know, so that really spoke to me, and knowing that like, there's this whole movement of people doing things for others, and it's not just about themselves, and it's like stepping out of yourself and like your action affects the world, or you know what I'm saying. And also like another thing is, you know, very big in Chabad is like simcha, and you know, like as a teenager, it's just like, oh, you got to be happy, you got it, like people telling you got to just be happy. But like when you learn about like a more deeper meaning of simcha, and simcha pours together, and it breaks all boundaries, and learning all these like things that you know, kind of show that like it's not just like my simcha and how to be happy myself and like how I'll be happy, but how that the simcha actually will make an effect in the world, and it will bring about a change or whatever it is. Or you know, I remember sitting in Verbrengen's, and we were like thinking of like someone that needed a refuah, like something, you know, something that, and we're like, our simcha is gonna, you know, our simcha is the thing that's gonna help. And just kind of like understanding like these deeper meanings to happy, like just be happy. And this is like, you know, certain things when I learned them, I was like, wow, okay. So it's, yeah, like doing and knowing that it has like a very big effect on the world, and doing things with simcha, breaking out of yourself. You know, I haven't learned in a long time, but like,
of course,
I just
remember, like you're in the thick of life and motherhood. So yeah, that's going to come later. But so you're saying that Hamaisa Hua Iker, which I want to explain, is the action is the main point. So that's something that spoke to you, which I totally get, because it seems like that's how your whole approach to doing, but you kind of knew it in inherently, like intrinsically. And then, so Hamaisa Hua Iker, the action's where it's at, just do, you'll figure it out later. And then you said simcha, joy, real joy, and how that's so beautiful, because being, I think this is something that all teenagers struggle with, the happiness. Like people say, be happy. What does happy even mean? Let's talk about that for a second. What does it mean to be happy? We confuse happiness and pleasure so much, and we don't understand what true happiness is. And it's a big part of being a Lubavitch Chassid is to serve Hashem with joy and to find the joy in our life, and how powerful joy is, and how joy can break so many barriers. And that's a beautiful thing. So, and it's interesting because you live your life with so much simcha, and like, this is what you're doing now, is you're impacting people with, on your Instagram, where you are spreading that simcha and that joy, and giving other people joy and other people to experience happiness. So like, it's interesting that that's something that spoke to you, because it's how you live your life. You clearly have a lot of joy also. So it's like, oh, wow, this is what really happiness really means.
It's beautiful. Yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how you put that all together. I think that like religion, I think that like my, if you were to brand me as Zaya Comedy, I would say that most of it came from religion. Like a lot of my comedy has to do with the religious life, but I never, thankfully, the way I was taught and the way the teachers approached it, it was very in an accepting, we accept you no matter what, like you're so welcome here. And I think that if there was any type of pressure, I wouldn't be here. It's only because of the way they taught it. And I think that I'm very thankful for that, because I think, you know, if it was in a rigid way, and religion was rigid, I would not be who I am today. And I think that I always had this lighter, you know, people would come up to me in Crown Heights and be like, what, you're a Baal Teshuva? Like you would never think, because I wasn't intense. Like, oh my God, I have to do this. Like, no, like I knew where I am, and I didn't like, you know, okay, whatever. Maybe when in the beginning days, like you think like, okay, these religious people are like the ones that are like the best, and I'm just like nothing. And like soon I'll get there, you know, but then you learn to kind of appreciate who you are, your journey, your path. But Yeah, it's just
You didn't put everyone on a pedestal. You didn't put, let's say, somebody who's been from all their life on a pedestal, and you were like, "Oh, I have to catch up because I'm not there." It was more like, "No, just do what you can do, and you're good the way you are, and each step you take is powerful and meaningful." So it didn't like you didn't have that typical like thinking less of yourself that some Balchuvas may experience and struggle with.
So in Crown Heights, I didn't have that because of the way that we were a family, and in the dorm, and everybody was like, there was no, I'm better than you. No, no. Later, once I was like in the system, you know, you're not so exciting anymore. like, oh my gosh, you're a Balchuva in the beginning. It's like, yeah. But then once I kind of like was in a community, you know, I'm in a beautiful community, but it was like this realization that like, oh, okay. You know, like maybe I need to be like them, or maybe I'm not from enough, or I don't know what it is. Like it's a very different experience than the seminary experience.
Sure. Just seminary is like a bubble of like the excitement and the joy. And I want to get into that. I want to get into that as well. Actually, because it's a really good question. It's a really good point I want to talk to. But before we get to that, how did your family, well, you mentioned that your parents were very supportive, but how did your friends, your family, your community that you were in prior to all this react to this significant change in your life?
Yeah, so it's interesting. Like I have non-Jewish friends that like till this day, they're like, I knew you would be religious, you know, like they saw that I was leaning towards that, or I would, you know, bring things up, conversations up. And I would tell, and there was one friend of mine, she was like my best friend in high school. And I would tell her, like, you know, I would just start wearing skirts here and there. And kind of, she understood, like we're in touch till today. So it was a very, they admired it. Like they, you know, I think
you had a positive experience. So people in your life were very positive about it, and your feedback was more positive.
Yeah, positive. There are obviously like moments where when you're still in the transition and you're like trying to prove like that this is the right thing, and like, don't judge me. You know, or people would ask you like, oh, do you even know what you're doing? Like, are they brainwashing you? And you kind of have to be like, oh, hold on a second. You have to like think about it, because I knew like that I belong there. But then when someone else would approach to me and be like, so what does it mean to no, no, no? And I'm like, oh, I don't know. Like, I'm just, you know, like I don't know I don't know the answers to your questions. I just know that this is what I mean. I'm meant to do. Or, you know, like deep.
You know, I make a parallel to Israel with that. Like, you have Jews today with what's going on. Like, I get emails from people in my community or friends and say, like, can you give me talking points about Israel? Because they know in their heart that Israel's right in this war, but they don't have the information to prove it to their non-Jewish friends or their Jewish friends. So they're struggling with that, and they want, so it's almost like a parallel, and not to compare, obviously, but you're saying like, when you're in it, it's like, I'm so excited about it. I know this is right. And then somebody questions, says, well, what about this? And you're like, I don't have the words for this. Okay. You're just going to trust me. I feel it. I know it.
Yeah, you got it. Exactly. I love the parallel. It's so true. I didn't have a lot of the answers even, you know, at like Shabbos tables, you know, we'd get invited a lot and be like, so, you know, I have a funny thing in my comedy where, you know, whenever someone asks me like, why would you want to be religious? Like people that are religious all their lives in Crown Heights would be like, why would you want to do this? Like, we kind of want to get out, you know, like whatever, like, why would you want this? Like, what made you, like, they're like, give me something juicy that made you want this. And I'm like, I don't really have anything. Girls in the seminary definitely has out of body experiences, like crazy things that happened to them. And then they decided, but really it was, yeah, like I said, it was a gradual process. And so like, yeah.
And so it's different for you. It wasn't like this like lightning moment where you saw Hashem and then you knew to come. It was like gradual. It was something that you knew inside of you, and then you just followed it. So it's, and that's a great, so that's a good question. I actually had that question. Like, if there was a point in your life that you could point to and like a moment or an experience that you had set you on this journey? Like, was there something specific? I mean, besides the NCSY Shabbaton, was there anything else that you felt like, okay, this is my journey, I'm on this?
I think I looked up to my brother a lot, and really that was like seeing him on this kind of like higher, different level, I guess I got a, like a, it wasn't something that, you know, like triggered it. It was more, I look up to my brother. I, you know, whenever he would share things with me, I really felt that like, that was like, it spoke to me. It's interesting. Like when I was like young, I always felt that there was kind of someone watching over me, you know, like it wasn't, I think when I learned about like what Hashem is and stuff, it wasn't so foreign, like I said, but whenever like someone would share things with me, I was like, yeah, yeah, of course. Like someone's watching over us, you know? So yeah, it was a gradual process. I can't think of like one thing that triggered and made it like, you know,
right.
I wonder
if that's usually the case, actually. Like, I think for people, it's a lot of small moments together. And it's like almost like a feeling like what you're describing sounds like, it's like a feeling of coming home.
Yeah. Yes. And that's
like,
what it was.
And like, oh, this is comfortable. I don't know how. I've never experienced this before, but this makes sense. And this feels good. This feels right for some reason. Yeah.
Yeah. This feels right. And everybody that was there was so many different people that had like important parts to this whole puzzle. And everyone had their thing that they had to tell me at that moment, like, oh, okay, so go over here and then go there. And then, yeah, we'll do this together. And everything just came together. And, I guess when you're younger, it's a bit easier because you're more like open, you know, if you tell me now, like, okay, go meet this guy that you never met and you might marry him. Like, I don't know. I'd be a lot more, you know, cautious about it, but it was more this, like, just going with the flow and, yeah, it's gonna work out.
Okay, so let's talk about this for a minute. We touched upon it before, but I want to go back to it. So when you transition from the initial excitement, right, of embracing Chassidus as a young single individual, you know, now you're a mom, specifically a mom of twins. You know, like that's a lot. Like the daily grind of life is exhausting. I mean, I'm a mom of seven. I know. And anybody who even has like more than one child, even one child, knows what it entails. So I'm just curious, like, how do you transition? How does Chassidus impact your day-to-day life today? Like right now, especially in the midst of the busy and hectic and chaotic routine of life, does the Chassidus or the life that you chose have an impact on all of that? And also, I guess it's a little different. How do you, I want to take this a little step deeper, like, in your day-to-day life, like how do you let that be part of your life? Because like we get so busy with routine. We're so wrapped up in like just doing what we have to do, going from place to place. Like how do you live with that in your life to day to day?
So again, it comes back to just knowing that it's there. I don't always have access to like an action, like that's how I connected in the beginning, was like an action. I'm gonna be doing chitas, I'm gonna be learning this, and I was like very on top of my game. And now I can barely open a sitter. I could barely, you know what I'm saying? Like it's so, sure. It was a very hard transition to kind of like my worst was like, oh, I'm not good enough. So I, like, you know, when I became a mom, I'm like, I'm not like what I used to be. And you know, I got over that trip, you know, like once I had a few kids, but that was like, I remember just thinking like, oh my gosh, I can't even. And then after my first, I actually had like postpartum anxiety. So I was like figuring things out on my own when I didn't, this was like, you know, she's almost 18. So it was a long time ago. So this was a long time ago that when I had my first baby and there was no information or, you know, social media or knowing that this is a normal thing that goes on. And so kind of like, you know, I remember telling my husband, like, you can't leave me on Shabbos. Like, I need someone with me. I'm scared. I'm like nervous. I'm, you know, or whatever. And kind of thinking like, oh, guilt tripping myself. Like, you know, he didn't go to shul because of me and all these things. And sort of like gradually understanding that, like, at the end of the day, we're normal human beings and, you know, we go through things and it's not always going to be the way it was in seminary. That was the way it was supposed to be at that time in order for me to be who I am today. But then kind of growing into life, growing into understanding my mental health better, like understanding what I could handle more. Like, I can't handle this right now. There's, you know, some things, you know, parts of my motherhood I was able to learn more, and other parts I couldn't. I was like, hello, I can't listen to 1 second of this. But then there's other parts where I was really inspired, and thank God for Shiurim and people that do like classes and invite people to their houses and whatever. You know, once in a while you go out and you see people and you're like, okay, there's other mothers, and they're also not doing, you know, this is part of my life right now. And then finally being okay and grounding myself and understanding that, like, this is my role, and actually this is the holiest thing that I could do right now, is to be a mom to my children and to continue this path through my children, and to be a support for them, because they did not have that excitement. They were put into this, you know, system, and they didn't choose it like I did, so it's very different for them. I just want to be like what I received and how I received it. I want that for my children too. I want to have a very open, loving, non-pressuring type of, you know, relationship with them as a mom. And so that is really, you know, whatever I learned in seminary, and how I learned it, and how I keep learning things, is only through love. And only through like acceptance. And so that is how I keep going, and through continuing to learn things. You know, my connection to the Rebbe is always very strong, no matter if I'm learning or not. When I was pregnant with the twins, I was like anxious. It was, you know, I did not expect to have twins. I had 5 kids, and then twins came along. I remember being really nervous, and I opened. I'm not someone that always opens the Igros Kodesh, and so I opened it, and it was really, really, like, I think this pregnancy was the time that I felt so connected to the Rebbe, even though I don't learn, I don't have time, I don't really, you know, once in a while a podcast or something that I listen to, but that letter was like such a reassurance that, like, you know, you're taken care of, like, we've been through this before, you're okay. And it was really, really powerful letter, actually. Like, it had the word multiply on it. Only later I realized, I opened it when I was like in the beginning of my pregnancy, I think I didn't even know I had twins yet. And it, that word, be fruitful and multiply, the word fruitful was not highlighted, it was only multiply was in bold. And a twin pregnancy is called a multiple pregnancy. So it was a really, really cool letter about anxiety and like how you overcame before and how you will overcome again. So these little, that's how really, you know, I lead my life right now. Knowing it's again, it's the same knowledge that it's there. Not necessarily I'm going and learning and doing, but it's just the knowing and knowing right. That this is and that obviously I have.
So then nothing really changed, if you think about it, because basically the way you were in seminary, even though there was excitement, but that same idea rings true till today, where it's like, it's there, I know it, I don't have to completely understand all of it, I don't have to completely be absorbed in all of it, I just do what I'm doing, and that alone. And at that time, maybe it was learning and chitas and davening, going to shul. And now it's my holiest work is being a mother and being there for my children, which means many days I don't even open a sitter, and many days I don't even do anything spiritual, but what I'm doing is so spiritual and so holy and so incredible. That's
beautiful. And embracing that. And, you know, also, I mean, I'm sure everybody goes through this, but like knowing your mission is also like what you're meant to be doing in the world is also very powerful. You know, once I learned that, like, bringing joy to the world through, you know, being an observant woman and bringing joy to the world in to other religious women who, I can't even tell you how many times I get messages like, only you can make fun of such a thing in the religious world. And like you made it like whatever, just like kind of,
it's not opening insulting. Up. It's not insulting. It's funny. And it's, yes, I agree. I find that that's how I feel when I watch your content too. Like, it's like, she's doing such a good job at presenting this thing that some other people might not be able to touch or talk about because it's too sensitive, and you can talk about it and it's like, doesn't feel sensitive at all.
You're right.
It feels actually like comfortable and funny and appropriate. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, we deserve to laugh. Like, we deserve to, like, you know, I'm saying, if you take religion at like, it could be very serious. It could be very like, this is what I have to do. Oh my gosh, I have to get ready for the holidays. Yeah, and you see people living like that. You see people really living like, oh my gosh, even like, you know, going to a wedding. Okay, whatever. Everybody has like, in that, it's not like really the financial part of it, but like going to a wedding, it's like, oh gosh, like the first thing they think about is like, I have to write a check. But for me, it's like, okay, I'll give what I can, but we're going to like the simcha, like that's what we're doing. You know what I'm saying? Or anything that has like, I have to do this, I have to go, I have to. And I never really connected to that. And there are people that really, really live like that in the religious world. And it's like, it's very hard. You know,
I feel like that's a big piece of the difference. And I don't like to differentiate Jews. I don't like labels. I think we're all one, especially now we need to focus on that. But that's the beauty and the gift of Chassidus. And I never knew anything different. For me personally, I grew up that way. So to me, Yiddishkeit was always joyful and always happy. And what we could do, what we did was great. You know, if you daven, excellent. You didn't daven, okay, tomorrow you could daven. Like, there wasn't like this negative connotation to it. It wasn't burdensome. It was more beautiful. And I mean, listen, there's parts of it that were hard, but that's the thing that I want to impart to my children as well, is that there's things in our life that are challenging and difficult. That doesn't mean that it's negative or has to have oh, I'm bad, I'm not good enough. It was always like, no, you are beautiful and you have a piece of Hashem and you are special just the way you are. And everything that you could do and every mitzvah that you do is special to Hashem. So it was more positive. So I think that when you, like, even around Chodesh Elul time, when you start to see the difference between some people's approach to it, like, we're like, yeah, the king's in the field and it's so amazing, we're gonna be blessed with an amazing year. And other people are like, oh, that's so fearful. Like, it's the Chodesh Elul wind is blowing. And it's like, wait, I don't even know what you're talking about. Like, I never learned it that way. So I think for you also, your experience coming to Yiddishkeit was with Chassidus. So for you, it's been quite the opposite of what I have to do. Rather, it's more like I get to do it and I could choose to do it. And it's such a opportunity.
Yeah. Right? And, you know, I have teenage girls. They express to me their things that are hard for them. I totally get it. It's a different way. When you're in a system, obviously, we're grateful for their school and it's a great school and everything, but there's just a certain
expectations and rules and things that are changing. Yeah.
It's different. It's like, you know, like, what if I don't want to do that? You know, like, you know, and when I was a teenager, I was able to do however, like I was able to practice the religion however I wanted to. So here it is. These are the guidelines. This is what you have to do. So I try my best to, like, you know, be very, very open with them, non-judgmental. That's really all they need. I wish that I can give to them my excitement that I had and like my gratitude of, like, you know, we get to do this. But, like, realistically, like, when you're talking to teenagers, it's not. No.
Well, they need to come to it on their own. I think that's a big thing. I think that everyone gets, you know, when you grow up with it, you need to come to a point in your life, and this is for everyone, where you re-choose it for yourself. It's almost like somebody who becomes a ger and at bar and bat mitzvah before bar and bas mitzvah, and at a certain point they have to say again, choose it at bar and bas mitzvah if they really want it. I think each of us in our own way need to choose our Yiddishkeit and our level of Yiddishkeit. And some people sometimes have to go away from it to come back to it. And we have to respect them and love them and accept them for who they are, because it's their process. we're parents. We're given these beautiful children, these neshamas to take care of and raise, but they're not ours. They're like Hashem's. We get to share with them and guide them, but ultimately they're their own people. And they have to, they have their own relationship with Hashem. It's not their relationship through me to Hashem. It's their own, just like you had your own relationship with Hashem. So yeah. I think it's something that's so important to keep in mind.
I think what's beautiful about like parenting as a Baal Teshuva is that like I'm learning so much through my children. They are learning things that I never learned. And sometimes they'll tell me something and I'm like, oh my gosh, I never knew that. Like there's so many things I don't know. Like I never learned, first of all, in a Jewish school. So the things that they're learning, it's really like going through the details and what happened and each thing. What I learned was really lofty things, you know? So if someone asks me what parsha is this in, or tell me the order of the like, I don't really know, you know? So they know, I think they sense that I'm not this like know-it-all. And this is, they know that I'm learning from them. Like I tell them like, wow, I'm learning so much from you. Like I think that that's like a beautiful part of our relationship as a Baal Teshuva parent, is that, you know, this is how I did it and you should follow the same path. And like, this is how it's supposed to be.
It's very humbling. And at the same time, it's vulnerable, which creates connection and which creates opportunities to even tell them like, you can do your path and I'm learning through you, but you know, you're going to have your own journey and it's going to look different than mine. That's really beautiful. So I have another question that I was thinking about. So the journey of any experience, obviously the initial charm often gives way to, you know, recognizing imperfections, you know. How do you handle that? How do you handle the unexpected aspects within the community that may be challenging or upsetting when you think, you know, you see things that people are doing that you're like, wow, you're religious, why are you doing that? Or I thought this was not acceptable in our community. And when you see people's imperfections, like, are things that kind of are bothersome. How do you deal with that?
I think that's a really good question. I think that there's so much to that question. We could talk about this for hours.
I know.
There was a point where there's like this discouraging, like, oh, I thought it's perfect. I thought everything is perfect in the religious world. There's a moment where you kind of realize like you have to let go of that expectation that every religious person is perfect, because in my experience, it was like, wow, my gosh, all these people are so amazing. I want to be like them. I want to be like them. And so, and then when we're in the system, there's things that are not okay. And you learn to not just be like, well, they're religious, so they know better than me. And you're like, hold on a second. That's not right. You know, like kind of learning how to know that you also know things, you know? So, you know, I thank God I have friends, I have a whole group that we all became religious together. My brother, his friend is my best friend. And I mean, his sister is my best friend. We have a whole support. I think it's very important for Baal Teshuvas to stick with Baal Teshuvas, besides for the people in the community. Thank God I have friends and people that grew up in this type of lifestyle. But I think that it's also very important to also have those connections, because you go through it together, and you go through all the things that you experience outside of the system and then in the system. And so whenever there was like something that bothered me about, you know, an imperfection, like you asked, I think I would right away call a friend and be like, I don't know this. I don't like this. Like, why does my child have to go through this? And I don't want, like, this is not how we grew up. Like there was more, I don't know, like different things. And so she would help me and kind of reground myself and kind of just focus on not religious part, but hold on a second. Like, let's just think, you know, child to parent, like, let's think like human, you know, not lofty. Let's just get into the, important parts of this right now, which is to take care of the situation and let go of expectations. That is like a really big part of it, is like letting go of the expectation that religious lifestyle is perfect. Nobody's perfect. I'm not perfect. Nobody's perfect. So, you know, conversations, like reaching out, it's, you know, you can't figure it out on your own.
I think that's a very good point. Like, to listen to your own voice. That was one thing that I heard you say, which is so important. Like, hear your own voice through it all. Yeah. And, you know, I think to realize that Hashem is perfect and Hasidus is perfect, but people that are living it are humans and they're imperfect. Yeah. And they're going to have mistakes and they're going to do things that are not what they should be doing.
Yeah, exactly.
And I think when we stay with that, that's a really good point. Like you're saying, like,
yeah,
like
at the end of the day, someone once said, she gave at her shir, she was like, it's like when you buy a product on Amazon, there's going to be 20 billion reviews, right? But when you focus on the actual product, you know, she was comparing it, I think, to the Rebbe. There's so many Hasidim and everybody does things differently. And so there's some things that you don't like, some people that don't make you feel good, and the way they say, like, this is how you should do things, and you're not good enough, and da 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 da. So, like, for Baal Tshuvas, a lot of them could be like, oh my God, they get a slap in the face, like, you know, oh my God, I thought you were gonna accept me no matter how I am. You know, there's some people that are like a bit more rough, and so they get the slap in the face, but to focus on the product, like, there's gonna be so many different people and how they do things, and just focus. Like, whenever I just like think, like, oh yeah, okay, like, this is why I'm here. Like, the Rebbe brought me here. I'm here. This is how I'm going to connect to Hashem. This is how I connect to Hashem. That person does it differently, but they're not going to affect, they can't affect me, how, you know what I'm saying? And so it's very hard to not generalize, because you're like, oh, I hate this. Like, this doesn't make me feel good. You know,
right.
Just being real with that. And then separating it. It's like all about like sorting and separating. Honestly, yeah. That, just okay, this is the real thing, this is why I'm here. Keep reminding myself, you know, talking with my husband, you know, like, just voices of reason, you know, mashpia, whatever it is, keep grounding myself and understanding that, like, this is like, there's gonna be bumps on the road, but
I think that's a good point. Also, like you said, expectations, having realistic expectations. You know, a lot of people, not a lot, I should reframe that. I've heard people say that they've become Baal Tshuvas. Some people became Baal Tshuvas because of a certain person that inspired them, and they were like looking up to them. And then that person, who was a human, chose something, made a mistake, and then their whole connection to Yiddishkeit kind of fell apart because it was all about that person. So when people are becoming, you know, choosing a different lifestyle, it needs to be about your connection with Hashem, not with your connection with the other people that are representing Hashem, like, as we see it, because they're humans and they're going to make mistakes. And then you're left with that feeling. But I think when we make it about Hashem, not about my teacher, it helps our teens too. Like, I'll say to them, it's good that you love this teacher, but remember, think about your connection with Hashem. Like, do it for Hashem. Don't do it for me, your mother. Don't do it for your teacher. If you want to do it for you. And it makes it something you can really work with.
That's beautiful. I really like that, because you're kind of putting all your eggs in that
basket.
Basket right there. And then if something goes wrong, you're like, who am I?
Right.
Like, obviously there's the people that are inspiring us, and, you know, sure. You know, whenever I talk to someone who got divorced, and keeping shops is hard, because you don't have that
family
thing. And, like, you know, the husband's not making kiddush. So what is there to, you know what I'm saying? So it's hard to, like, the people in our lives are so important. like that they really are a very big part of like why we keep doing things. You know, it's just like we spoke in the beginning, like the connection and the people in the dorm. And if it wasn't for all those friends that I made, we kept our connection forever. And if it wasn't for those teachers, and if it, you know, all those people in our life, like my husband, the fact that he's non-pressuring, he's not like, oh, the, you know, like super strict, like with, you know, and I wouldn't be able to handle it. And all those things are really, people are very important in our journey. There's like no doubt about it. But, you know, kind of like always, you know, going back and thinking like, why am I doing this? Why am I doing this? It like, we can't deny that they're important, but at the same time, we also have to remember like who we are inside, like our own, it's not easy.
It's not, but I think it's true in almost every area. Forget spirituality, forget Yiddishkeit for a second. In every area, we have to do that. Parenting, in our marriage, we have to remember our own voice. So we have to be true to who we are at our core. And that helps us be able to navigate those relationships. So I've always wondered this about people, but I've always lived a religious lifestyle. So I'm always curious, like, are there aspects from your previous life that you find yourself missing? What would that be?
Well, I really like the music that I grew up with. I don't miss it. Like, oh my gosh, I have to listen to it every day. But once in a while, I'll go in the car and I'll just blast it because that's all I need at that moment.
Okay, which music specifically?
I really like just pop music. You know, I grew
Celine
up
Dion?
No, it was more like, you know, Backstreet Boys or Spice Girls and like things like that. I liked rap. I liked R&B, Mariah Carey, different things. I don't know, just brings back like,
the feeling that you remember. Music is very transformative. It takes you to the place that you were when you were listening to it, literally.
Yeah. And sometimes there's so much heaviness, responsibilities, this, like in a mom's life. There's a lot. And so sometimes that's all I need, really, is just to like dance, listen to music. My friend and I sometimes like we turn it on, we blast it on in the car. And it's just like, I don't know how to explain it. And, you know, I don't know if I would allow myself to do that in the beginning when I first learned about music and how it affects our soul, and you know. And so like I didn't do that in the beginning. But then once I was like, that's all I need right now, you know. It's just, that's what's going to help me. And thank God I'm able to give myself permission to do, you know, to like, and I know that that's, you know, I'm not like super connected to it and I need it to survive, but that's what I do once in a while. That's something that I miss. I remember like not understanding like the Jewish music was like so like, like loud all the time, like kind of like the very similar tune. Now it's different. There's so much variety, but in the beginning I was like, So, that was hard to connect to. And I was like, I just want good music. So thank God now, like, I really like, Nisim Black and, you know, Mordechai Shapiro. There's like a lot, there's so many, so many.
Well, it's a lot different. Music today has changed immensely from
very different, very different.
Okay. I thought you were going to say lobster, but okay, fine.
No, I didn't actually, my parents, I think it's an Israeli thing. They're like very petrified of lobster.
Oh,
they're like, no, the sakta, like whatever. They're very, like, they just, lobster was another thing. But we ate not kosher. I think things that like were like donuts, a kosher donut, like, I tried to explain this to my husband. I'm like, you don't really know what a donut is. It's not doughy and bready. It should not be that way. It should be melting in your mouth. Like, and I remember trying to explain, and it's like hard to explain, but like a real donut, like when you go have a donut in Dunkin' Donut or the Krispy Kreme donuts or whatever it is, like, that, like when I'm pregnant and I'm craving something, that's usually the donut. And like also kind of that lounge comfortable clothing, like, hard for me to wear stockings and skirt. It has to be like kind of proper. Now there's also a lot more variety. The modest fashion was not happening when I was becoming religious. Like there wasn't so much like kind of sweater dresses and things like that. It's just like skirt, stockings, shoe. I didn't like that look. It bothered me. I'm like, no, I want to have sweatpants and sneakers. Sweatpants and sneakers. That's how I grew up. That was hard. That's something that I missed. Wearing jeans, like kind of always, like just stepping out of the house and it's chick chack. You put jeans and a sweater. And so here it's like much more thought. Oh, I hate wearing stockings. I have to wear this. And like, you know, and like, so now I transitioned to fully like just leggings because I couldn't handle the stockings and that's yeah. what I could do. But figuring that part out was hard. What else do I miss? I'm trying to think. I guess like also, I don't know, because I was a teenager before I was religious. I wasn't a mom. I wasn't a mom. So whenever I'm right. having like a hard time, whenever I'm like overwhelmed, if I wasn't religious and I was a mom, you know what I'm saying? Like I'd probably have right. the same steps, like same, you know, but yeah, that's what I can think of.
That's good. Okay. So I just want to finish off with like a last idea, but for someone who is entrenched in this lifestyle, like grew up religious, grew up Chabad, maybe whatever style of Yiddishkeit, they might be feeling jaded or uninspired. Like what message of inspiration and upliftment would you share with them? Because I think when you live it and you're, like you said, your kids didn't choose it, right? They were just born into it. You kind of take it for granted in a way. It's not as exciting. It's not as special, but what could you share with them that might help them understand or be more inspired?
So this is like for someone that grew up in this type of lifestyle?
Maybe even somebody, for anyone. I mean, even somebody who became Baal Teshuva and is feeling, you know, uninspired at the moment. Even Baal Teshuvas have those experiences too.
Yeah. Yeah, of course. I have those experiences too. there's many times where I'm uninspired and, or that I have to kind of, like when my friends call me and say like, oh God, I don't know if I want this anymore, you know, it's normal. It happens. It's so normal. What I say, I would say that like a lot of the times we're looking for inspiration on the outside. We're looking like, who's going to inspire me? Who's going to like just take me out of it? And like, but really a lot of what I learned is like, I'm inspiring, you know, like learn to kind of know that you are amazing too. And that you, there's a lot to you, your path, your journey in life, everything you did, every step you took, like to kind of appreciate that, to kind of, you know, talk to yourself and say like, you know, I'm still here. I worked hard to be where I am today. And like sort of fall in love with yourself, which is sometimes hard because we could be very critical of ourselves, like we're our biggest critic. But I don't know, once I started falling in love with my path, my journey, and understanding that like this is who I am and understanding my mission and working, if you know, if I didn't understand my purpose or mission in the world, it was really hard. But like once you work towards that and you surround yourself with the people that are going to help you get there, I think it's like such a big deal. Like waking up in the morning and knowing I have an important mission, and being a mother is like really hard. Like sometimes to know, like, what am I supposed to do in the world? Like just change diapers and like make supper. Like I don't want to make supper every night. I just don't want to do it. You know? So it's like, it's like being a mom and in the religious world, I think like the biggest thing is to be surrounded by other people like that are going through the same thing and to kind of talk and be like, when you're in your own bubble, it's a scary place. Mm-hmm. So I really do get inspired by people, by other mom, just being real. I don't usually get inspired by the, like life can be amazing. I get inspired by the real things, the ones that are like, I had a crappy day today, but then I, you know, spoke to Hashem for 10 minutes and like, you know, 2 minutes, whatever. And then I just, whatever, just those are the things that you know, bring me life, and knowing that I'm not alone, we're not alone, and we're, and you know, there's you know it's hard to know that, like, you're the only one going through this, and you're the only one going through life. Life can be very challenging. There's so many different chapters, but appreciating who you are, like appreciating who you are.
So it's like it's similar to something that you said throughout this whole conversation, which is your own voice, like finding your purpose, finding your meaning. And then when you have that, then when the time gets tough, you kind of go back to the basic of who you are and finding your grounding yourself and finding you, what talks to you, and going back. And a big part, which you said, is uplifting yourself by being with others, because loneliness is the hardest part. We know that when we're with other people who are going through similar things, they can uplift us. Yeah. And that's a very good, a good thing to keep in mind. That's a good, that's a good reminder.
Like, I didn't go out in a while for like these events that, like, there was like a Utes Kislev thing last night. And I didn't want to go, and like, to be honest, I was like, I have so much things to do, you know? And like, my friend was like, she wrote a text. She was like, look, I never beg you to come, just come. Like, I don't know. I just saw that message. I was like, fine. And she also said there's going to be good food. So that was like another thing. But like, okay. Sometimes those are the things that you need to hear in order to go. And then once I went, I was like, wow, so thankful. So thankful.
Always like that.
Yeah. In Canada. Yeah. Like in Montreal, you're really in your own bubble if you don't make an effort to go out and see people and communicate and talk. And the community is like a beautiful community. And like, you know, there's moments where I see it, like when I give birth and like everybody comes and like helps them, you know, all these things. So you really see it, but you don't always see it in Montreal, because you're just like always a lot at home. Besides for the summer, like you're really, really school, kids, pick up, carpool, you're in your car, you know? So when I went to the event last night, two people, they're like, hi, I never see you. I'm like, yeah,
I don't get out much.
Like, I'm in my car. You know, I'm picking up the kids. Like, but I'm, yeah. So yeah.
I love it. Yeah. I really appreciate you coming on. I just want to share with you that one of my favorite sketches that you do are with your brother. And it's funny. And they're my faves. And
my brother is like hilarious. I tell everybody this. Like, he's hilarious. Like, he's so funny. He's just like... You have to do your own page, you know.
Well, I like the combination of the two of you together, especially when you do the Amerikai voice
and
you tend to be American. So I love it. But so I just want to thank you again, Zaya, for this opportunity and for sharing and being vulnerable and real. And I really appreciate you doing that.
Thank you. Thank you so much for having me. It was really, really a comfortable conversation.
Good.
Thank you.